My name is Eric Brooks. I got saved in a church in North Carolina 9 years ago. It was home up until 2 years ago. We moved here, my family. And just a little background on me. I grew up in a small town in Texas, small farm. We had cows and chickens and goats and a horse. And, you know, I grew up on a country living lifestyle. My dad was a mechanic. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, worked a couple little jobs and stuff, but for the most part took care of us. My parents were great parents. We went to church once or twice a year, didn't know what church was, what God was. I looked at God as the Easter Bunny or Santa Claus. It was, you know, to me it was just something that they told us just to keep us in line. We considered ourselves Christians. You know, everyone from Texas, I think, is a Christian. That's what we think anyways, but we, I watched my dad drink a lot as a kid. I didn't think he was an alcoholic until after I got saved, and I kind of started looking back going, okay, I know more now. He would drink beer all the time. My uncles would come over. It was the normal thing, you know, barbecues. I didn't know you had lemonade and sweet tea. It was just Coors Light or Busch, you know, kind of what we did. So I started, you know, drinking with the guys at 8 years old, sipping beers and sneaking beers and running off and taking them. I wanted to be like them, you know, and, we would go to the deer camp, 9, 10 years old, and I would be drinking with the guys, you know, I thought it was a cool thing to do. As a young man, I just kind of went through life, watching and seeing, but not knowing anything about God and the church and what this was. My aunts and uncles, my cousins, they were all pretty much heroin addicts. Everyone in my family were big into drugs. We didn't do family reunions. We stuck to ourselves. My mom and dad, they didn't do those things. They wanted to keep us away from that. So in my eyes, they were good parents to keep us away from all that. Even though I saw it, they didn't do it. And I fought from the age of, kindergarten all the way through freshman year. I was a fighter. I was picked on as a kid. So I got really good at fighting. I started in picking fights, started fighting all the way through, boxing, doing all that. And I enjoyed it. It was something that I could just release anger. I don't know. I was an angry kid. I started smoking marijuana at 13. When I went to my freshman year, I got kicked out of school for assaulting another kid. It was probably the worst fight I got into, and had to go to court. The judge knew me multiple times being there. Once I went to a freshman year, I transferred schools, got into the ROTC, junior ROTC program. I knew right then and there I wanted to join the military. It was something that I had a passion for. Even though I was doing ROTC, I still found the wrong crowd. I was still smoking marijuana, never stopped. I started selling it at 16, large amounts, you know, at 16, you know, selling $500 increments was large for me. Growing up in a small town anyways, you know, stole my first car at 16 years old. You know, I was going down the wrong direction, and I had my dad and my mom sign for me at 17 to go to the military. I knew if I stayed in this area, I was going to turn out like my cousins and all my friends. So I just decided, you know, the military is what I needed to do, and I committed to that at freshman year, and I stuck through it. So at 17, my parents signed for me to join. I went to boot camp. I turned 18 in boot camp. So, you know, I was right at the edge of my 17 years old, but they still wouldn't let me go unless they signed. That put a lot of stress on my mom. I was still an angry kid. I liked to fight. So my thought was, I want the coolest job I can go to, that I can get in quick, you know, and get there. I want to go to Afghanistan as soon as possible. This is 2008, 2008. The war in Afghanistan was going on, and I wanted to be there. So I joined the Navy as a Navy corpsman. A Navy corpsman is a medic. You know, Marines are rough and tough. They don't have medics. If you want to be a medic for a Marine Corps, you have to go Navy corpsman route, and then you get elected to go what they call FMF, Fleet Marine Force. So not everybody gets to do this. So I knew if I wanted to do this, I had to be in shape and I had to be the top of the top. So I graduated top of my class. I was expert marksman. I shot competition shooting. I fit in with the guys. You know, I knew I could do this. So I became a Navy corpsman with the United States Marine Corps. I deployed to Afghanistan in 2009, November 2009. While I was there, I was chosen to be the leader of our QRF team, which is Quick Reaction Force team. I got put with a small unit that we did a lot of, in my eyes, cool things. You know, I was with the guys, they call them the killers. You know, small teams, and I was their doc, I was their medic. So while I was over there, I was there for 7 months, 7 month deployment. So at this time, you know, I'm 19. I saw amputees, loss of limbs, double amputees, arms. I seen bodies ripped in half. I experienced small arm fire, rockets, explosions. I was one of the few that came back. So I was blessed to come back. The whole time I was there, you know, I didn't know God. I still didn't believe, didn't know. No one's ever told me anything about God. And, you know, if I died right then it was the end. There's nothing else. You know, that's how I looked at it. This is over. We're done. They bury us. We move on. You know, that's it. So while there, it was traumatizing. You know, it was war. I seen bodies being burned. I seen, you know, friends of mine, lose their life right in front of me. You know, I was picking up body parts, you know, and tagging them as whose part this is, you know, and, as a young man, 19, anybody, I don't care how old you are, but as a young man, for me, that was very traumatizing. I seen grown men, these rough and tough Marines, you know, they were crying. They were broken. You know, they were, in this fight. So they just pushed through, and I did the same thing. I said, okay, we're going to be here. If we lose focus, we're going to die. So let's just move on. And, made it back, came back from, overseas, and, shortly after I came back, you know, while I was going through school, I met Natalie, and we were both young. You know, we were in love. She was going. She started a semester in college, and I'd come back from Afghanistan, and we both were like, the only way we can make this work is get married. And so we didn't tell anybody, and we eloped. We got married. We were in love at, you know, 19 years old, and we're going to make this work. So we got married. She moved with me to North Carolina. Her parents were not okay with this. And at the time, we just told them that, you know, we were dating still. Like, we weren't even married. But it was later on that we told them the truth. But we're young, you know, we're by ourselves. We have no family around us. We're in North Carolina. I was suffering at, you know, all the time through nightmares and depression and anxiety. I started losing my friends. So the guys I came back with, the ones that made it back, slowly started committing suicide. All of us got into drugs. When we came back, we all turned to drugs and alcohol. It kept us numb, you know, it kept us going. We wanted the adrenaline rush, so we did everything we could to get that adrenaline rush back. You know, I bought a motorcycle. I, you know, I was a daredevil. I did whatever it was just to have a little bit of a rush. You know, I started doing tattoo parties at my house and getting tattoos, and I had my sergeants and everybody come to my house. We'd do cocaine on the table. You know, it was just kind of a party lifestyle. Became in a biker group, you know, just kind of not doing the right thing. Natalie and I were best friends. You know, she smoked with me. She drank with me. We were best friends. I mean, it's what we did. She got pregnant with Tyler, and I knew I couldn't live that lifestyle anymore, but I was, at this point, you know, I was kind of stuck in that. You know, I had severe anxiety and depression, PTSD, TBI, which is traumatic brain injury. I would go to Walmart, and anyone that looked at me wrong, I'd want to fight. I would walk into a restaurant, and I'd have to seat myself. I wouldn't let anybody seat me. I would make sure my back was to the wall, I could see the exit. I'd walk into a building and count the security cameras, count all the exits, the front, the rear. I would know my escape route if something were to happen. And someone, I felt like I was always under attack. I started getting real paranoid. I thought that the government or, you know, our people were out to get me. You know, I thought, you know, everyone was out to get me. You know, I'd count every guy in the room and say, okay, he's caring, he's not. I could kind of look and get an idea of what I needed to do if something happened. You know, I would go to sleep and I'd wake up in the middle of the night and walk around the house, do a perimeter check and make sure all the windows were locked, you know, and just not normal stuff. People, you know, they don't do that. And, you know, Natalie knew, but she didn't know the extent of it. I kept it to myself. All my Marines came to me, and I was their doc. I was their counselor. I was their friend. So they were telling me all these things that they were experiencing: depression, anxiety, lack of sleep, you know, addiction. And in my mind, I'm saying, I got all this, but I'm not telling anybody because I've got to be strong for these guys. So I just buried it and used drugs and alcohol to cope. And she was 9 months pregnant with Tyler. I got arrested for a DUI. I was passed out at a red light. Don't know how I got there. You know, I was at my friend's house getting tattoos, and that's the last thing I remember, you know. And when I came out, I just knew that this couldn't be the life I, you know, she was 9 months pregnant. She could have had Tyler and I wouldn't have been there, you know? So I said, I got to change. I don't want to do this anymore. At this time I was sleeping on the couch. I used to have bad nightmares, and drinking intensified it. So I was, you know, I woke up to hold Natalie in a choke lock at one point, you know, and a friend of mine was pulling me off. And you know, it's like, I had no recollection of that. I didn't know what was going on until it came to. And I'm like, you know, I was having a nightmare. And so I started sleeping on the couch. We weren't good marriage wise. You know, the person that I came back from Afghanistan was not the same person when I left. So, you know, she didn't know. And, I just told her, I was like, you know, you deserve better. Go find someone else. This is how I'm going to be for the rest of my life. She was stubborn. She was like, nope, I married you. She, you know, I'm going to stick with you through it all. And, you know, we had Tyler, and then I was going through inpatient care, outpatient care. I was put on antidepressants. I was telling, you know, I was going to see a psychiatrist at this point. I wanted help. So I was seeking help, medical help. And all they wanted to do all day, as in the military doctors, were just, oh, this pill didn't work. Here, try this pill. This pill didn't work. Try this pill. And it was just, they were numbing me to where I was a zombie. Literally, I could do a day-to-day function, but I was always high, you know, and that's how it was. And at this point, I'm like, well, cool. The military is providing all these drugs for me now. So it's even better, you know. So I knew as a dad, as a husband, I couldn't raise my kids that way. And, I couldn't have a wife. I couldn't have a life like this, you know? And so I, more and more, I just was just, I wanted out, but I couldn't, you know, get out of that. And I was so torn. I was broken. All I wanted to do was get out of the military. I had a 5-year contract. I was right at my 4-year mark, and I went to work, and this was the last day of work for me. My close friend, my best friend, who we deployed together, he was the only one left. Everyone had committed suicide or they had gotten out and left. All of them got divorced. It was just me and him left. And he wasn't married or anything, but he was a close friend, a mentor. He was my senior guy, and you know, I respected him. I came to work. This was on Monday morning. Friday, he did a bunch of cocaine and got on his motorcycle and had a motorcycle accident and died, never came back. So I was torn at that point. I said, yeah, I'm done with this. I can't be here anymore. There's death all around me. There's drugs all around me. I don't want to be here. And so I ended up, I went to my chief and I just told him, I'm done. Just let me sign right now. I did 4 years out of a 5-year contract. So I had 1 year left, and this 1 year left, they were going to move me from where I was, with all I know is hard charging Marines, hoorah, you know, devils. And they wanted to move me to the blue side and be at a hospital. And they wanted to put me in a medical record room, have me in charge of medical records for that last year. And I said, look, I wanted to commit suicide now. I definitely going to commit suicide if I go there. So do not put me in a hospital with medical records. And so I, you know, they were, I was on the med board. I was being evaluated for you know, medical separation, medically retired. And, I just couldn't wait that year. And I just told him, I said, just give me the paperwork. Let me sign today. I'll sign away. And I did. I signed on the dotted line. It wasn't that easy. I had to fight to do that. I told the guy, just, you know, give me a drug test. I'm dirty. You know, I'm dirty. Give me a drug test. I'll fail it right now. So that's what we did. They didn't want to completely ruin me. So they, the drug test was my out, but for my separation, they gave me an admin separation, which means that, you know, there's a lot of things that could have happened, but they left it blank. I got out, you know, I knew I could work for myself. I was very handy with my dad was a mechanic. I learned how to work on cars. And so I started buying cars, fixing them, reselling them. I started working at AutoZone, as a parts manager, getting paid $10 an hour, you know. So I went from military, you know, very well respected, to basically starting over. And, you know, I thought getting out of the military was going to help everything. I thought getting out was my answer to, I'm no longer depressed. I don't need this stuff anymore, to where it was not the case. I started drinking more. I was smoking more, to the point where I'd get up in the morning. I would smoke first thing before I even, you know, got dressed, smoke marijuana before I got dressed. And then I would, drink a couple beers. I go to work, you know, and that's how I was. And then even working for myself in the garage, I had a beer cooler. I drank all day. I thought it was just the normal thing to do. You know, I seen that as a kid and I didn't think anything of it. I really wanted to stop, and Nally wanted me to stop. So I went 3 days. She said, try for me for 3 days, or try as long as you can. I went 3 days. And during those 3 days, I was going through severe withdrawals, shaking, sweats, vomiting. I'd wake up and throw up in the morning before, because I was going through, my body was going through physical withdrawals. Those were the worst 3 days of my life. You know, I told her, she looked at me and she's like, I don't like you when you're drinking and smoking, but I'd rather you be somewhat okay than be in this situation right here. So I went back to just, you know, doing that, drinking and smoking and prescription pills. And, you know, I was told that was my life. This is going to be me for the rest of forever. And, I kept pushing Allie away. I was like, you need to find someone else. You know, you deserve better. I'm not a good person. I'm not a good husband. I'm not a good dad. And she just was like, no, we're going to get help. We're going to get through this. This is all going to be okay. And she was depressed, but, you know, she couldn't come to me. So she went to her mom, and her mom said, well, why don't you find some friends? Why don't you go to a church? And her mom was not a believer. Her mom, you know, did not go to church. And she just did that as more of a socializing thing. It was like, go find some friends to be with. So we went to a church together. I went with her, walked into the church. It was a small country church. No one said hello to me. No one said anything to me. No one shook my hand. We did the whole service. No one spoke to me. We walked out of the service and said, do not ever ask me to go to church with you again, because those people were judging me and they did not care that I was there. And it was real bitter to see that, you know, really seeing a church where you're supposed to be, you know, you hear all of this stuff. I didn't know any of it. You go into a church and then that happens. It was very, to me, it was discouraging. So I, went back home, and Nellie was like, that wasn't the church for me. Her mom was like, find another one, you know, go to another one. So Nellie goes to another church, and I didn't go with her. I was like, nope, you go ahead, you know. So she went to church. She came back, and she was a completely different person. She went in one thing, came out another. She no longer wanted to drink with me. She didn't want to smoke with me. She was like, nope, you know, I'm not doing that. But she didn't rebuke me on it. She just was, you know, she was still being submissive and she was being a loving wife. And, you know, I was like, where's my wife at? Who are you? You know, this is not normal. So she would go to church and leave me at home. And this church was like Sunday morning, Sunday evening service, Wednesday evening service. They did Saturday outreach. There was so much in this church. Nellie was doing everything. So I started getting suspicious. Like, why is she going around all these people so much? Like, what's going on? So I was like, I'll go with you. So I went to the church, walk in, and again, I'm drinking and smoking every day. So I'm high. I smell like Coors Light. And I go in, I sit in the back row, back corner row, and, you know, I'm seeing everybody, and everyone's just so friendly, and everyone's shaking hands. Everybody's nice. And I'm like, this is a whole different atmosphere than what I was, you know, what I just seen prior to. And I'm sitting there, and a brother comes up to me, and he wanted to pray. I said, nope. Like, I just was very rude to him. He got up and walked away. And a few weeks later, not even a few weeks, I think it was a few days later, he comes to my house. I'm like, who are you? How do you get my address? Like, why are you here? And he's like, I want to help you. I want to talk to you. And Nellie had already shared with her, you know, her story with some of the ladies, you know, and this was a brother who was, you know, married. So I was like, I put two and two together. I'm like, Nellie told you everything. He's like, no, we haven't talked. It was just more, I think we can relate him. I'm looking at this guy, and when I walked into this church, you know, he was wearing a suit and tie, and I'm like, that ain't me. I don't wear a suit. I don't even own a suit and tie. Like, this dude is not anything close to me. So I was like, you know, you have nothing to relate to me on, man. He's like, listen, I grew up on a ranch. I'm a hunter. I have cows and horses. And I was like, okay. He goes, I was in the Marine Corps. He was like, I was on ship and I was dropping acid on ship. And he's like, the sergeant major, I was running through and I knocked on his door and said, you're going to hell. Jesus is coming. He was like, I didn't know God at the time, but man, I was telling everyone that they were going to hell and I was tripping on acid. And I was like, okay, maybe I can relate to this guy, you know? So I, you know, I'm listening to him, and you know, I still don't believe it. I'm thinking maybe he's telling me a story, you know. And he kept coming to my house regularly, and I didn't really want to go to church, so I'd pop in here and there with Nellie, you know, if I felt like it, but it wasn't for me. I didn't want to be there. I'd come in, I saw, you know, the nice building. I counted all the security cameras. I'm looking at all the emergency exits. They start passing the offering plate around. I'm like, yep, here it is. They want our money. Okay, this is all it's about. You know, I thought that. You know, I was very negative. And, you know, I went off and on for 6 months. And for 6 months, that brother kept coming to my house. And to the point where he'd like, just hop in the truck. Let's go, you know, mudding and just go put in four-wheel drive and go out in the woods. You know, just guy stuff. You know, I was like, okay, this guy's kind of cool. I can hang out with him. He didn't drink. I would drink and he didn't drink. I would smoke the bong right in front of him. He was like, you know, he like, you shouldn't do that, you know, but that's who we became friends, you know, and I liked the guy. 6 months into it, I Nellie said, they're having a revival. This is a Sunday night service going to Wednesday. She's like, can you please just go with me all service, you know, every service, just go with me. So I committed going to service with her every day for that week. And, Sunday I go, drinking all day, smoked all day, went there, and I felt something different. I said, okay, something's going on here. This pastor, it was an evangelist. He was a black guy wearing a cowboy hat, cowboy boots, and I like country music, but I also like rap. So he would do a mixture of like country rap in his songs, and it was all about God. I'm like, what is this? Like, this is totally different. So I enjoyed it. He started preaching, and I was like, Nellie, did you have dinner with their family? Because he's telling me everything that, you know, this in my life. And like, how does he know all this? You know, I was getting mad at Nellie thinking that she was sharing all my personal detail and life story with this guy. And, so we go Sunday, Monday, you know, I'm going to pause on my drinking toward the end of the night because I wanted to really listen, you know, and hear. So I wasn't completely high and it wasn't, you know, just me being me. It was something was happening. So I went in Monday, a little less drinking, a little less smoking. And it was again, God was speaking to me. I didn't know it was God speaking to me at the time, but it was literally like everything that he preached on was my life and how he overcame it and how he was, how, you know, God delivered him and how it was just amazing. I was like, this is unbelievable. So then Tuesday, a little less drinking, a little less smoking. I go in and again, it was like three nights in a row where this is happening. And I, at that point, you know, I'm getting goosebumps. I want to cry. Nellie's never seen me cry. So I'm like, this is something different. We leave Wednesday night. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I said, you know, I'm going in completely sober. I want to make sure this is real. I go into the church. I've been to this church for 6 months. I've seen their protocol. I've scoped it all out. They say at the end of the service, everyone bow their head in prayer. No looking around. You know, they do a call for salvation and they do a sinner's prayer and they lead people to the Lord. And I've watched this over and over and over again. So in my head, I'm thinking, I know the routine. I know people are going to raise their hand. And I know they're going to walk up to the altar and everyone in the church is going to see that. And now, you know, it's almost like a red target on your back. They know I'm struggling. So they're going to all rush to me like, you know, like they want to talk to me and shake my hand and stuff. I didn't want all that. So I'm like, I'm not going to do that. But before he could even say, God was speaking to me, and before he could even do the altar call, my hand was already up, and I'm standing up, and I'm like, I stand up so fast that I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I told myself I'm not doing this. Like, what am I doing? And at this point, I'm like, I'm on the outside row, and I'm like, I'm already standing up. There are people looking. They say, you know, bow your head and close your eyes. People look. I was a looker. I know people already see me standing up. And I'm like, son of a gun, what am I going to do? So I'm like shaking. I'm physically shaking. I'm like sweating. And I feel a push from behind. And I kind of stumble, you know. And one foot was already going, so I just kept one foot after another. Like, I forgot how to walk, you know. And so I'm walking to the altar. I'll turn around. There was nobody behind me. Nobody was behind me to push me. And so I got down to the altar. I had reconstruction surgery on my ankle before I got out. And so I couldn't kneel down. My left ankle was always hurting. And I got down on one knee and I just, you know, I didn't know what to pray. I didn't know what to say. I just said, God, if you could do what you've done for everyone else, I'll believe. If you can do what you've done for everyone else, I'll believe. That's all I said. God spoke back clear as day. I will never forget this. It was supernatural. Go home and get rid of everything. That's all he said. That's all he told me. Go home and get rid of everything. And, you know, at that point, I'm about to break. I'm like super emotional. No one there had ever seen me cry, and Natalie never seen me cry. You know, I'm like, I'm not going to cry. I'm biting my cheek so hard I'm bleeding. You know, I'm biting my tongue. I'm like, you know, I'm just going to hold it in. And all I got to do is just stand up and walk out of here. Everything's going to be fine. So that's what I did. I stood up. I walk out of the door. Didn't say anything to anybody because I knew, again, I watched it all. Hey, brother, good job. You know, you entered the house of the Lord, you know, salvation. I didn't want all that because if someone talked to me, I was going to start crying my eyes out, and I was not about to cry in front of all these people. So I just literally beelined it to the door, got to the car. Natalie's, you know, looking around, like, where did he go? She knew I walked out, typically what I did. She got Tyler and Evan. We had Evan at this time. She was 9 months pregnant with Evan when we started going. 8 months pregnant with Evan when we started going to the church. So we had both kids, and she put them in the car. She gets in the car. I'm in the passenger seat, and she goes, she turns to say something. I said, stop. Don't talk to me right now. That's all I could say. Because if she started talking to me again, I was just going to start bawling. And I did not want to cry. So we drove home. It was only a 10-minute drive to the house. And I got home. She, you know, got the kids out of the car. I went straight to my garage. My garage was my man cave. I take the blue trash bin. I wheel it in front of the garage. I open the garage door. I rip posters off my wall. I had Cheech and Chong posters. I had Miller Lite, you know, posters. I had beer posters and, you know, just all kind of just, I had all my CDs, Metallica, Pantera, you know, all this hard rock, heavy metal stuff that I was listening to, and all the rap, you know, the Eazy-E, the Too Short, all this old school, you know, rap that is like perverted. You know, I'm breaking CDs and I'm throwing them in the trash. And, you know, he said, get rid of everything. I don't know what that meant other than I'm getting rid of anything that I thought was leading me down the wrong path. I was growing my own pot. I had 6 foot tall marijuana plants in the back room. I'm ripping the plants out, I'm ripping the lights off the ceiling. You know, I'm throwing all this stuff out. All my pipes and bongs, I take all my prescription pills, throw them in a Walmart bag, fill the bag up with prescription medication. And, you know, I'm getting rid of it all. I'm throwing everything in this trash can was completely empty. It's completely full. Beer, full beer cans. I'm throwing the cans away. All the alcohol, getting out of the house. You know, anything that I thought was sinful or was in my old life, I didn't want it anymore. Again, no one told me to do this other than God. I had no history, no background of church. So what I was doing for me, now I know what I was doing. It's so surreal, but it was a moment in my life that I was listening to what God told me to do. I look over and I have this beautiful motorcycle. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't ride it anymore. I got to get rid of this thing. And, you know, I posted it for sale right then and there, posted it online, sold it. The helmet came with it. The helmet was like, had $100 bills with Benjamin Franklin smoking a joint, you know, on the helmet. That's what it was. You know, it was, my life was full of sin. And, you know, I'm throwing everything away. And then I go inside, I sit on the bed. Natalie's sitting there. She didn't say a word during this entire time. She knew what was going on. And, I said, okay, I can talk now, you know, and I told her everything that I just told you guys and went to bed sober, woke up sober, first time ever for a long time. I woke up no sweats, I wasn't vomiting, no withdrawals, my ankle wasn't hurting, completely healed. Like God completely healed me of everything. PTSD, TBI, ankle, no pain. You know, and for me, again, you heard the 3 days of my life of quitting were of the worst 3 days ever. I was a complete believer at that point. No one could tell me that this wasn't real, because I went from being a complete addict to cutting cold turkey in overnight, you know, and that was supernatural. You know, it's not, it doesn't happen. You know, so I really wanted to do more at that point, you know. So, you know, life after Christ is where I'm going now. I started witnessing to everyone and anyone I could speak to. I would stand up and say, at AutoZone where I worked, "You guys are going to hell. Turn this music off," you know, and I'd start, you know, witnessing, but it was not by love or grace. It was more just my aggression still was there, and I didn't know how to witness. You know, I didn't know how to do all this. So that guy who would come into my house all the time started discipling me, and we started getting close, and I learned, you know, what this was, what this lifestyle was about. And I felt like a baby being taught all over again, you know. It was interesting, you know. It was something different. I started tithing. I heard, you know, hey, tithe. If you tithe, you know, God will bless you. You know, not necessarily that way, but that's how I looked at it. You know, I'm going to put in, you know, the tithe and see what happens. So first time I tithe, I put a $20 bill on the offering plate, not knowing, you know, actually the scripture of tithing the tenth. So I put a $20 bill on the plate. Later on that day, I went to the ATM. So let me see how this works. I put the ATM card in. I asked for a 20. $40 came out. I cannot make this up. I'm not making this up. I'm like, oh my gosh, it really worked. Like, I was like, I'm like beyond, you know, belief. And I'm like, Natalie, I'm calling her. I'm like, can you believe this? You know, and I became one of those crazy people for Christ, you know, where I was witnessing to everybody. I'd go to the gas pumps and start, because I watched this guy do this, and this is what he would do. He would go to the gas pump and start, "Can I pray for you? Can I pray for you?" You know, it's like, who does that? You know, and it was just really, it was touching. You know, I was getting paid $10 an hour at AutoZone, and a brother said, "Hey, you know, pray, be specific on what you need." You know, and I'm like, okay, I'll start being more specific on my prayers. So I told God, I said, I want a promotion. I want to, you know, become a, I went crazy. I want to go become parts manager. I want to be a GM. And so I prayed and I got put on a panel for a GM position. And it was me and three other guys three of us. I was the youngest guy on the panel with the least amount of time under my belt with AutoZone. These guys have been with AutoZone for over 8 years both. So there's no way I'm going to win this. This is just me. It's good training. So I took it. I prayed before. I did my interview. I got the job. You know, and then I said, you know, to the point where I asked for a specific salary amount. It was to the T, to the penny, the exact salary that I asked for. That was all God. You know, I started reading the Word. I started wanting to see what was out there. And I read a scripture that really changed me. Like, it's John 10, 11 through 13, where it says, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd sacrifices his life for his sheep. A hired hand will run when he sees the wolf coming. He will abandon his sheep because they don't belong to him and he isn't their shepherd. And so the wolf attacks them and scatters the flocks. The hired hand runs away because he works only for the money and doesn't really care about the sheep." So for that scripture, God speaks to us all differently. And to me, that was at that time was a revelation for my work, you know, a hired hand. I looked at it as I was the hired hand, and I was only here to collect a paycheck. I didn't care about these people. I was just here to do a job. My whole outlook on life changed at that point. I said, you know what? I don't work for any of these people. I work for God. I work for the Lord. And the Lord is always watching. So I used to walk by that piece of trash and say, someone else will pick it up. But now I walk by that piece of trash and I pick it up. And I had to teach my kids the same thing, because it's not it's a respect thing, but it's also, you know, God's always watching, whether we think it or not. Like, that little piece of paper may not mean anything to us, but it doing the right thing when no one's looking is what I took out of that. And I started praying. I started getting job offers. I started, you know, I was getting offers that wouldn't be given to anyone unless you have a master or bachelor's degree or master's degree. And it's like, I became a VP at 29 of a company. I never applied for a job. Everything came to me. Everything came to me through prayer, you know, and, you know, I am now, you know, national director for Turtle Wax. I'm the number two guy in the United States. I have no college degree. You know, none of this could have happened if it wasn't for God. God did everything, you know, and, you know, I look at that and I say, you know, it's, you know, how could, I'm a nobody. You know, I was stealing cars at 16. I was smoking marijuana at 13. I came from a low income family. Like, I was broken. I was a bad person. And God chose to pluck me up and use me, you know, and it's mind blowing what God can do if you just allow him, you know, and if you just listen. I started doing ministry in the church. I wanted to do more. So I started doing ministry in the church, where a brother and I, we created a program called Difference 180. And I was prior military. He wasn't. So he would do on the addiction side. I would focus more on the military. We were in North Carolina, Jacksonville, North Carolina. It's the largest Marine Corps base, outside of Camp Pendleton. It's right there in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. So I was ministering and witnessing to all these Marines that were broken, all these people that were doing the same thing I was doing. I was ministering to them. And, you know, that became a huge part of who I am and of what I was doing. During this time, you know, I got hit with cancer. I'm a cancer survivor. I had testicular cancer. Was told never going to have kids again. I was told the first day at before treatment, I had 6 weeks to live. You know, this is 5 years ago, next month. I, went in for surgery, started before my radiation. They were saying, hey, you're not going to have kids anymore. You know, at least for 2 years, you're not going to have kids anymore. No way. And when you, after 2 years, you may have kids. So they wanted me to put stuff away in the sperm bank. I said, no, I'm not doing that. I'm trusting the Lord. And, you know, I started my treatment. 2 weeks later, we found out we were pregnant with Sarah. So Natalie was pregnant with Sarah before my diagnosis of cancer. So, and then, you know, we didn't know it was a girl. We had, you know, Tyler, Evan, and Henry, and we're like, we want a girl. And we prayed specifically for it. We've been praying for a girl. We tried one time before radiation, before all that stuff. The doctor was like, it may not work, but, you know, you got a little bit of time. It worked. We got pregnant with Sarah. You know, fast forward, you know, we came here. You know, we didn't know why we were coming here. We got, God called us here for a reason. We listened. We came to Illinois. Right away, she's pregnant with Lucas. So now we got baby number five coming. So it's like, hallelujah. I was saying that. Natalie was kind of freaking out, but I was super excited about it. I was pumped. I was like, amen. Like, God is just, it was awesome to see what God was doing in our life. You know, I got testimony upon testimony. I can stay here all day, but Natalie needs to come up here and talk. And, you know, I just want to say, you know, as I come for membership today, you know, I want to say that Jesus Christ is my good shepherd. He's my everlasting Father. He's everything to me. He's my Lord. He's my God. He's my King. My wife and I, we wouldn't be married today if it wasn't for him. He chose us. You know, I still don't know why, but he chose us, you know, and I'm thankful for that. And, I've had my ups and downs over the years, and I'm not perfect. You know, you don't just put on the suit and tie and then become perfect. It doesn't happen that way. Like, I still struggle. We all do. We are all sinners. I pray this often, but I want people to see God in me as I seen him in all the brothers and sisters that surrounded me. You know, I want others to have what God gave to me. And when I came to this church, you know, I felt the same thing that I felt the first time that I came to the church. Everyone here is super nice and friendly. Everyone shook my hand. Everyone was, you know, hey, how you doing? You know, I go to breakfast with the pastor and he's like, hey, can I pray for you? Talking to the waitress. Can I pray for you? I'm like, he's doing it. You know, that's what we should be doing, you know, and that's as a fellowship like this. I'm glad to be here. You know, I'm thankful that God's directed Allie and I. You know, we had no clue when we bought our house that right down the road, you know, 15 minutes, we'd find a church. You know, we had another church we were going to, and they got redirected to another state. And, you know, we were bummed, but then we found you guys, and God knew what he was doing. So thank you all.
Praise God.